Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. It's the pulse of conservative talk on the internet. So glad to have you back on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I know it's been a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, it's been a while since I've been with you, and I apologize. I appreciate that you've all been waiting with bated breath for me to return. I can't thank you enough, but I've been participating. I've been in my spare time. I've been participating in the effort to craft a challenge to the state of Colorado, who is keeping personhood off the ballot in 2012. And I must admit, I come to you this week a little more bitter, a little more jaded, with a little less faith in the abilities of mankind in general, but with more faith in God, because as I look at the situation, whether it be related to personhood or other important issues, I must admit that only God can fix this. This is really a mess, ladies and gentlemen. This is really a mess. This past couple weeks, I haven't really looked at the news. Until this past week, I began again. I couldn't bring myself to do it because it was all just so depressing. I watched as the mainstream media, not only did they advocate the positions of the sworn enemies of all things good and light and right, but they actually took the other side, whether it be with the Islamists or the sluts. I said sluts. I apologize if that offends some people, but that seems to be the chic of the day, slut chic, and not just amongst the Democrats, but amongst the news media. Not that I should be surprised. It just gets depressing, and I get sick of reading it. I get sick of talking about it. And I have to resist the urge to just hunker down in the McBurney compound with a pallet of beans, a case of whiskey, and a Bible, and some firearms. And I've decided to resist that urge and to go ahead and go to air with you today. And so where should we start? Should we start with politics, the Salafists, the Caliphate, the baby killers, the socialists, the government schools, the military? Oh, let's start with politics. Let's start with politics. This is a story from CBS out in Boston. Apparently, there was a debate between Senator Scott Brown, Republican, and Elizabeth Warren, the Democrat. Yes, and Scott Brown is telling Elizabeth Warren to stop scaring women. Stop it. Stop scaring women. And he doesn't mean just scaring women with their extremely high and sharp cheekbones in small enclosed areas like elevators and whatnot. He's talking about the alleged war on women. What does Scott Brown have to say? He says, "You stop scaring women, professor." Why does he call her professor? She's a quota hire. And he goes along and calls her professor. Just goes to the heart of who Scott Brown is. The ultimate Republican. Look it up in the Bible. Look up publican. And you'll understand Republican. He says, "You should stop scaring women because I've been fighting for women since I was 6 years old." That's what Scott Brown says. He's been fighting for women since he was 6 years old. Now, he doesn't elaborate on what he was doing at the age of six to fight for women. But maybe there was a girl on the playground whose ponytail was yanked. And Scott Brown stood up chivalrous and defended her. He insisted, in the debate, that when it comes to women's rights and religious freedom, he said, quote, "I have the same position as Senator Ted Kennedy," proving that what was liberal has become conservative. And what was, I don't even know where it goes from there. I was having a little Facebook debate with a good friend of mine. One of the few listeners left who I haven't offended and caused to just turn off the show completely. He was encouraging me to vote for Romney Ryan. And he's a dear brother, and I love him. I love him as much as I can. I've never met him, but I love him like a brother because he listens to the show. And there's only like 9 of you out there. So I really tried to tread gently so as not to scare him off. But I said, you know, he said, what did he say? He said, you know, Romney and Ryan have vowed to overturn Obamacare and strengthen Medicare. And I said, brother, don't you remember 50 years ago when the conservatives denounced Medicare rightly as socialism? And now one of the credentials of a conservative is that he's going to preserve and strengthen the socialist program that our grandfathers and fathers screamed and pulled their hair out about? Is that where we've come? What was liberal has become conservative. And what was leftist has become stone Marxist, and I refuse to participate in either. Thank you very much. My warning to people who want to vote for Mitt Romney is that he's got blood on his hands, and my advice would be don't get any on you. Anyway, back to Scott Brown and Elizabeth Grey Wolf Warren. I think that's her Indian name. It's her Native American moniker. There's not much more I can say. It's like the Russian front, Scott Brown and Elizabeth Warren. There's just nobody to root for. There's no good guy here. He has the same positions as Ted Kennedy. Stop scaring women. Scott Brown should scare conservatives. He should scare Tea Party types. But in our rush to be part of the winning team, we seem to have abandoned true conservatism in favor of a temporal political victory. Scott Brown being the poster boy of all that. Only because Scott Brown might win. Mitt Romney would be the poster boy, but Mitt Romney is doomed to go down in flames. And you just don't want to be a part of that. It's going to be embarrassing. And you're going to wake up on Wednesday morning after the election, feeling like one of those girls in a college dormitory who wakes up realizing that she can't believe what she did last night. Speaking of that, let's go to the New York Post. Monica Lewinsky turns 40 next year and is ready to air bombshell details from her Oval Office trysts with former President Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton. Yeah, she's apparently she's shopping a memoir around in literary circles. She's looking for a $12 million advance. That's right, $12 million. Now, she claims she hasn't been able to get a job. What does she do here? She got her master's degree, doesn't say in what particular field, and she worked briefly as a news correspondent, and she launched a failed handbag line. And so she's had a rough time in the 14 years since she wore that blue dress. She's looking for a $12 million advance. She's also going to release love letters that she wrote to Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton. Yeah. Okay, that should generate a lot of interest. No, I'm being facetious and sarcastic. I don't think it will. I did find one thing interesting and even touching about the story. Monica Lewinsky claims that while she was an intern and while she was hanging out in Washington, D.C., and wearing that blue dress and all that, she claims she was impregnated by a low-level Clinton administration official and that she actually had an abortion at the height of the Monica Lewinsky-Bill Clinton scandal. And there's just nothing funny about that. It's just sad for Monica and for all kinds of women like her who are used by powerful liberal men and then cast aside like so much refuse. I actually felt sorry for Monica when I read that. I was kind of derisive of the whole idea of Monica, $12 million, a master's degree. I was like, come on. But the fact that she was manipulated by powerful Washington men and then manipulated into committing an abortion against her child, killing her own baby. Well, she says it was a low-level another guy altogether. It wasn't. I don't know. I mean, we don't know. She's admitting she had an abortion. That's all she's willing to admit. Well, there's an awful lot of stuff she shouldn't have been doing. I think we would agree on that. But it's sad. It goes to my theory that the very first person in human history to ever think of the idea of killing an unborn baby was a powerful man. That's what I believe. I don't believe it was a woman seeking to liberate herself from the male-dominated culture. I don't think it was seeking liberation. I don't think that's how the idea originally came to fruition, so to speak. I believe it was a rich, powerful man trying to get rid of the evidence and manipulating a woman. That's how I think abortion came to be, and I think it has ever been thus. So those of you who think it's liberating and that it's some kind of constitutional right, well, you're the ones being manipulated. You're the ones being used by men. So it's ironic in a dark and twisted kind of way. All right. Speaking of dark and twisted, let's go to CNN. Let's see here. CNN reports that far from the U.S. military being broken by allowing homosexuals to serve openly, a recent report by a group of U.S. military school professors found, quote, "The repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell has had no overall negative impact on military readiness or its component dimensions, including cohesion, recruitment, retention, assaults, harassment, or morale," unquote. It's had absolutely no impact, according to a group of U.S. military school professors. They say the U.S. military today has the same level of readiness as it did in 2011, before the queers were allowed to pour out of the closet onto everybody. That's what they say. They say recruitment is just as high now as it was then. And when the CIA recently did an assessment of the risks to American national security, they found dangers that ranged from loose nukes to terrorism. Gays and lesbians in uniform didn't even make it into the threat matrix. That's right. And I'll agree that loose nukes are scary. But I think homosexuals in the military are a little closer to home, at least at the moment. And also, the corrosive effects of allowing deviant perverted behavior, whether it be homosexual or other varieties of deviant perverted behavior, to fester in the military is something that is going to produce results over the long term. You can't have a bunch of U.S. military school professors who work for the people who passed the law allowing the queers openly in the military. You can't believe what they say. They're beholden to the very deviant perverts who passed the law allowing the homosexuals to serve openly. What does CNN go on? Those who predicted doom ignored that the military of today is staffed by young millennial men and women who do not share the anti-gay sentiments of previous generations. And that in and of itself is scary, the fact that we have a generation of young people who no longer find perversion perverted, who no longer think deviants are deviant. So just because they don't realize their deviance and perversion doesn't mean that it's every bit as corrosive as it always has been. Kind of gives a whole new meaning to the term unit cohesion, for crying out loud. I'm sorry about that. Let's see. The people who were against the homosexualization of our military, according to CNN, ignored the experiences of allied militaries in places like the UK, Australia, and Israel, all of which found that open service would not be destructive. That's what they found. That's because they were a mess like 400 years ago, people. Don't you remember America was different? We staked out the moral high ground, and we conquered this continent with righteousness. On a Christian foundation, that's what made us different. And now they're celebrating that we're descending to the level of the Europeans and the secular Israeli state, which is just a disaster, just a disastrous mess. They say, "Don't Ask, Don't Tell's end has been an unmitigated success by all measures." If we're ever going to push past the poisonous political climate of today, we have to start turning to the facts to build our positions. And when we genuinely disagree on our positions, stop painting the others as hell-bent on total destruction and treason. Well, I'm going to stick with my assertion that the people who have allowed the homosexualization of our military are indeed hell-bent on total destruction and treason. That's where it all leads. Wasn't the army private who dumped all those documents over to WikiLeaks, wasn't he some kind of deviant, perverted queer? I can't even remember the young pervert's name. But that, I don't think that figured into their threat matrix as they were analyzing this particular story. Let's see. This is a quote. I'm quoting someone here. Who am I quoting? I don't know. Some homosexual advocate in the government or the military. All right. I can't do any more of that. That's CNN for you. All right. One more here before we go to break. Cato Kaelin. This is from the Justice File. Remember Cato Kaelin?
Oh, yeah.
She shook her head. No. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the reaction of 99% of all Americans. Cato Kaelin has told someone in an interview. Let's see. This is from the Huffington Post. The freeloading house guest who became a minor celebrity for his meandering testimony at the O.J. Simpson murder trial now feels safe saying that he thinks O.J. Simpson killed his ex-wife and her friend. Here's what he says. The statute of limitations has now passed, so now I can say, yes, he did it. Somebody needs to remind Cato that there is no statute of limitations on murder, Cato. The reason you can say what you say is because O.J.'s locked up in prison in Las Vegas, and you don't have to worry about him cutting off your head, Cato. He says, asked by whoever interviewed him, TMZ, okay, so that's, is that where I'm getting my news? It's a wonder I even go to air with this garbage. He's asked why he didn't tell the truth. He said, I was too scared. I was terrified. I mean, O.J. had just cut those people's heads off. What do you think? Cato says, so do I feel he's guilty? Yes, but can I prove it? No. And that's what happened in the court of law. The brilliance of Cato Kaelin, ladies and gentlemen, boiling down and crystallizing the state of Western civilization. Everybody, listen to what I got to say here. I'm going to go to the culture file. This is from the Daily Mail over in London. A bit of a concerning story. According to an alarming new study, the number of people dying from suicide in America has drastically increased while car accident deaths have lessened, making suicide the leading cause of injury and death in America. Oh, I'm sorry, the leading cause of injury death. What is injury death? This is a British newspaper. They speak English better than we do, so I'm going to assume that I'm lacking. So in America now, more people die from suicide than from car accidents. Now, additionally, suicides are terribly undercounted, said Ian Rockett, author of the study, published last Thursday in the American Journal of Public Health. So not only has suicide eclipsed car accidents as the leading cause of injury death in America, but one of the lead researchers says suicides are terribly undercounted. He says, I think the problem is much worse than official data would lead us to believe. We have a situation that has gotten out of hand. Well, there's the understatement of a millennium right there. Listen to this. From 2000 to 2009, researchers noted a 25% decrease in car accident deaths, while deaths from suicide rose 15%. So we've got better, safer cars, but we've got more broken and depressed people, apparently. But at least they're driving in style. Let's see. According to this article from the Daily Mail, the shift in the statistics makes suicide the most frequent cause of injury deaths, followed by car crashes, poisoning, falls, and murder. And the researchers indicate that an awful lot of the poisonings and the falls, if they were properly investigated, would probably qualify as suicides as well. So you've got suicide, number one, then car crashes, poisoning, falls, and then murder, bringing up the rear for the moment. In 2009, more than 37,000 Americans took their own lives. But worry not, ladies and gentlemen. A suicide prevention program is being launched by the United States government with $56 million of borrowed federal money. Yes, $56 million program. And we've got a spokesperson for this program. What does he have to say here? He says the goal of this new federal program is over the next 5 years, we will save 20,000 human lives. That's according to the guy who's getting the 34 or the 56 million. He's going to save 20,000 human lives over the next 5 years. The irony, ladies and gentlemen, is that in the next 5 months, that same government will witness about a 500,000 murders by abortion with no real plan to do anything about it. So that's ironic in a dark and twisted kind of way. But we have a plan to do something about it. And when I say we, I mean the Christians. And I mean the Christians who actually believe in Jesus Christ and what he said and what he did, and who aren't ashamed to stand up and tell you about it, frankly. We have a plan. We have a plan to restore the unalienable right to life of every innocent human person. Now, here in Colorado, we've been dealt a pretty severe blow. We're not going to be on the ballot in 2012, but the potheads are. That's right. Yep, I know. The lobby to legalize marijuana, medical and otherwise, did manage to get their issue on the ballot. And we, Christians here in Colorado, we failed. So it's been a bitter pill, let me tell you that. It's been a bitter pill to swallow. But you know what? You can't win every round, and this is a long war, ladies and gentlemen. And just because personhood will not appear on the ballot in 2012 does not mean that we are not going to launch a fierce challenge against the ruling of the state of Colorado and perhaps find a way to get on the ballot in 2014. And the bottom line is we're not going to quit. We're not going to give up. And the issue of the right to life of every innocent person is not going away because it is the truth. And the truth will win the day. Whether we, as weak and flawed human beings, whether we do it, or whether Jesus Christ himself returns and does it, it will get done. I really hope we do it. Because I'd like to do that for my kids and my grandkids. You know, seeing as they're going to be pretty much flat broke their whole lives, I'd like to, them to at least grow up in a culture that recognizes some semblance of morality. All right. Yeah, like Justin Bieber's mom, right? You heard there was an interview with Justin Bieber's mom talking about how she couldn't abort little Justin. She was an unwed mother. She couldn't abort Justin, and she gave birth. And I suppose it's a decent thing to do, but it's not the pinnacle of human endeavor. I mean, not killing your baby is not the absolute best you can be. It's like the bare qualifications for being a civilized person, of which Justin Bieber's mom qualifies, because she didn't kill her baby. Doesn't make her some great person. I don't know. Maybe these days it does. I mean, what was liberal has become conservative. And it used to be that being a hero and saving your nation or your family from catastrophe made you a great person and a hero. Now, if you just don't kill your baby, you're some kind of hero. So that's how far we've fallen, ladies and gentlemen. Well, back to the suicide. This article from the Daily Mail in London, they say that the bad economy probably has something to do with all these people killing themselves, a bad economy. I think it's bad morality, bad religion, the absence of any religion. It's the absence of Jesus Christ. And he keeps getting pushed to the side more and more. I was driving through Denver the other day, and I had to recalibrate my radio. Had to reset all the presets because they had all gone out. And so I came across a radio show that I never listened to. It's a Christian talk show by a local pastor named Gino Geraci, considered by many to be a leading pro-life, a Christian advocate here in Colorado.
And I listened as he gently and in a very sophisticated, lawyerly manner talked an undecided voter into voting for Mitt Romney. This caller said, you know, I'm very uncomfortable with Mitt Romney. He's flip-flopped on the life issue. He's gone this way. He's gone that way. I heard what he did in Massachusetts. I heard that, you know, they have abortion in their state health care plan that they call Romney Care. I'm having a hard time voting for Mitt Romney. Gino Geraci, great Christian leader here in Colorado, told the young man that what he really needs to do is remember we're not in a perfect world. And you have to look at which candidate lines up most with your beliefs. And the caller was, you know, your average moron and didn't know what to say or do or think. I would have said, well, Gino, I'm not for killing anybody. How about that? Couldn't we at least find someone who's not for murdering anybody? Is that too much to ask? I just don't want any innocent people murdered. I know that's a really high standard, but come on. And then the caller brought up the fact that Mitt Romney is a pretty high up bishop or charlatan or Charlemagne or something in the Mormon cult. Isn't Mormonism a cult? Isn't that what we fundamentalist Christians have held since, whenever the guy got the beer goggles and saw the gold plates? Haven't we always maintained it was a cult? Well, you know, Gino said, I suppose, but remember, this is not a perfect world. At which point the caller should have said, well, yeah, but he's a cult member, for crying out loud. Do we have any standards anymore? Anyway, finally, Gino, great Christian leader, pro-life advocate, he said to the caller, I want you to stop and think about your job and your paycheck and the economy. Who is going to do better for you and your pocketbook in November? So I heard Gino Geraci on the radio. He basically said, and I'm paraphrasing liberally, he basically said, I know that Mitt Romney instituted homosexual marriage in Massachusetts. I know that he instituted taxpayer-funded abortion. And I know that he is a member and strong supporter of an anti-Christian cult. But you should vote for him and do it for the money. That's what Gino said on the radio. Anyway, I did not save that station in my presets. I moved on. I saved AM 670 KLTT, where I listen to Bob Enyart live. He's the only Christian talk show I can listen to anymore. And who's that old couple on at like 1 in the morning with the soft screen and the Vaseline on the camera lens? Can't remember their names. The end of days with these two. Anyway, I watch them every once in a while just for comic relief. Jack Van Impe. That's it. Jack Van Impe and his lovely wife. Anyway, Gino Geraci's out. Not that he was ever in, frankly. I never listened to his show. But I remember him speaking at a personhood event just a few years ago. I'm wondering, Gino, what happened to you, brother? Anyway. If anybody knows Gino, please send him a copy of this. Somebody needs to sit him down and have a talk with him again. He's straying off the reservation. So there, we've chronicled the systematic downfall of the American media, the justice system via Cato Kalin, the military via Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the political campaign via the Russian front there in Boston between Senator Scott Brown and Elizabeth Warren. We chronicled all that for you. That's all the politics and the culture stuff. Let's get down to domestic tranquility. From Sheboygan Falls, Wisconsin, two 13-year-old Wisconsin boys have been charged with using a hatchet and a hammer to kill one of the boys' great-grandmother while stealing jewelry and a car from her, and then they went out for pizza after the crime. So, but you know, America, our real problem is the economy and jobs and regulation. That's our real problem, America. Just keep moving. There's nothing happening here, ladies and gentlemen. There's nothing to see here. Move on into the election booth and follow your conscience, ladies and gentlemen, and do it for the money. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the 2012 Republican National Committee campaign theme song. Romney Ryan, 2012. Do it for the money.
Yeah.
Sing it, Cindy. It's one of the few songs where I actually like the keyboards. All right, that's... Okay, Cindy. Go dye your hair or something. All right? Get out of here with that. All right. So we're back. Pretty offended at Gino. Just sad. But I guess I've become an outlier. I know that I'm a pariah now amongst many of my friends. They accuse me of throwing the election to Barack Obama because I refuse to participate with the socialist or the cheap socialists. Because Romney's a socialist too. He's just cheap about it. He wants to steal less of your money and convince you that you've retained some of your freedom. Obama wants it all. And folks, if this is the way we're headed, then I would prefer that this whole thing come to a head very quickly. And I think that those of you who have decided to vote for what you describe as the lesser of two evils, I have decided that I am going to give you what you deserve, and that's Barack Obama for 4 years. And at the end of that, I think you're right. There will be no more America. I agree with you. But don't blame me. It's not my fault that everyone's gone socialist. It's not the Christians' fault that there's nobody we can vote for because all the Republicans will put up is a socialist, pagan, baby-killing, faggot-marrying. Okay, I need to calm down. I mean, if that's what you're going to put up, Republicans, then you're going to get punished. And I say let Barack Obama destroy America because we Christians will be here to clean up the mess for all you idiots. We won't leave you. We still love you. We just think you're incredibly stupid. And we've been cleaning up after you people for 2,000 years. And we're willing to keep doing it because Jesus Christ has given us a level of love in our heart that is simply supernatural. Because under normal circumstances, I would throw all you people under the bus and I wouldn't think twice about it. But because I have a relationship with Jesus Christ, he has taught me to care about even the most foolish among us. And so when all the smoke clears, ladies and gentlemen, we will be here for you. Idiots. All right. Let's go to the politics file and let's keep the show moving. We don't want to get too... I don't want to scare everybody off. The story from Politico, the New York Times has introduced a new policy opposing quote approval. Now, I didn't even know there was a quote approval policy, but the New York Times has come out with a new policy opposing the policy that I was unaware of. What is quote approval, you might ask? Yeah, well, here's what quote approval is. The White House and the Obama and Romney campaigns and other organizations have recently required quote approval schemes as a precondition for interviews. And what that means is a politician or a spokesmouth or a spokesdyke or a mouthpiece or whoever it is speaking for whatever socialist catastrophic organization is going on a news media outlet for an interview. Basically, once the interview is over, all of the quotes from the person in question are submitted back to the person in question by the alleged reporter so that the person in question can approve the quotes before the article goes to print or air. Is that too complicated to understand? Basically, these people want the opportunity to correct their lies before the story is officially published. Yeah, that's... And the New York Times says, starting now, we want to draw a clear line on this. Reporters should say no if a source demands, as a condition of an interview, that quotes be submitted afterward to the source or a press aide to review, approve, or edit. So I wasn't even aware that the New York Times had collapsed to this level of journalistic depravity. I didn't even know this was going on, but apparently this is business as usual in journalism right now. News organizations like Bloomberg, McClatchy, the National Journal came out in opposition to the scheme, but the movement has lacked an industry leader like the New York Times, whose opposition might bring about a substantive change, as according to Politico. The Times' new public editor, Margaret Sullivan, called on her paper to identify a clear policy on the issue soon and said the paper had been reviewing its policy for months. How does it take you months to figure out that you're being lied to? When someone demands that you submit their quotes back to their press aides so they can match them up to the news of the day and correct any inconsistencies, does it take months to figure out that you're being bamboozled? That you're being shucked and jived? I mean, come on. This woman probably has a college education, for crying out loud. She's the public editor at the New York Times. You'd have to assume she's an intelligent human being. Not necessarily smart and not necessarily in possession of any wisdom, but you would have to assume she's intelligent. Jill Abramson, I can't even pronounce her name. Jill Abramson, the executive editor there at the New York Times, she acknowledges that if they change their policy and stop with the quote approval, she says, quote, we will lose interviews. So they're going to lose interviews over at the New York Times if they stop regurgitating lies back to the liar so the liar can vomit them back out upon you and I, the unsuspecting public. Well, I'm not unsuspecting anymore. And now neither are you. We all now know what's going on. Let's see. The New York Times says they're going to draw, where was it here? We need to draw a clear line on this, said the New York Times and people therein. They said any potential exceptions to our new ban on quote review should be discussed with a department head or a masthead editor. That's the best they can do at the Times. That's as clear a line as they can possibly draw. All right. Now, let's go to the science, really, file. This is from Reuters, and I'm rapidly running out of time, and I didn't even pull that many stories this week, but I guess I've just been, I haven't been reading much news and just too much commentary. So let's get down to the hard news. There's a project, ladies and gentlemen, called the ProBio 3 Project. It started back in June. It's co-financed by the French government. It's an economic stimulus program, and it aims to use traditional horse bedding materials to develop a new kind of biofuel. Horse bedding, to you and I, that would be straw and hay. Yeah, they're going to use straw and hay to make a new kind of biofuel that can be used in a 50-50 blend alongside kerosene to power jetliners. Okay, I'll wait for you. Yeah, they're going to power jetliners with straw and hay. Yeah, they say planes will fly using agricultural and forest waste. That's according to Carol Molina Huavey, the professor at Toulouse's National Institute of Applied Science. So I was going to say something else there related to horse betting, but I held my tongue there on that one. Let's see. She says, we need to translate what is done in laboratories to the real environment while improving its profitability and efficiency. That's the straw and hay that they're going to power future jetliners with. They do plan to mix it with kerosene, though. There's that caveat in there. I'm going to mix that. Backers of the program believe that wood chips and agricultural waste could be an alternative fuel for jetliners in the future. Proving the old axiom that belief doesn't necessarily translate into reality. Just because you believe you can fly a jetliner on hay and straw and horse poop or whatever doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. But it is quite a profitable economic stimulus plan for the folks who are cashing the checks. And that would be the checks, the money that the French are borrowing from their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Let's see. Here's how it works, just in case you were wondering. Wood and straw is broken down into sugars through enzymes, then mixed with microorganisms such as yeast and transformed into lipids through the chemical process of fermentation. The fats obtained are then treated with hydrogen to make a type of hydrocarbon with similar properties to fossil fuels, what you and I would call oil and natural gas. That sounds like quite the process. I mean, it'll keep a lot of Europeans busy, that's for sure, during this unfortunate economic downturn. But let me just be the first to predict that jetliners will never fly on horse bedding. It's horse feathers, so to speak. All right. So that was the lighter side of the science, really, file. Now let's go to the dark, twisted, sick underbelly of the science, really, file. This is from Reuters. Scientists have restored hearing to deaf gerbils using human embryonic stem cells in an advance, so-called, that could eventually help people with an intractable form of deafness caused by nerve damage. The animals were deafened using a drug to destroy their auditory nerves before receiving an injection of human embryonic stem cells, which had previously been treated with growth factors, to coax the human embryonic stem cells into becoming ear cells. The response amongst the gerbils varied. Significant uncertainties remain, according to the Reuters article. In particular, the ability of embryonic stem cells to morph into any other cell type in the body means that they can cause tumors. Another concern or uncertainty is that transplanted cells may be rejected by the recipient's immune system. One concern that is not mentioned here, ladies and gentlemen, is that people, not unlike you and I, are being told that they will someday soon be able to consume the flesh of murdered children in order to enjoy their iPod.
The devil says.
I just quoted the devil, as a matter of fact. That's right, boys and girls. Someday soon, you'll be able to consume the flesh of murdered babies so that you can improve your quality of life. But that's not the problem, right? I mean, it's not the degeneration of humanity and man's love toward his fellow man growing cold. That's the problem. It's really jobs and regulation. Move on to the voting booths, ladies and gentlemen. There's nothing to see here. Let's go to New York from the New York Post. School nurse offices in New York City, stocked with contraceptives, can now dispense Plan B, an emergency contraceptive and other oral or injectable birth control, to girls in the school without telling their parents. But don't worry, folks. There is an opportunity for parents to opt out of the program. The school will send out a letter saying that we're going to inject or give your girls pills to kill their babies. But you can opt out of the program. If you don't opt out, well, you get what you deserve. Well, if you send your kids to the public schools, I was going to say you get what you deserve, but really your children get much more than they deserve, which is so often true in life, is that when you sin, you are often punished beyond what you deserve. For example, a young teenage girl is seduced, let's say, in a classroom by a professor or a classmate. She makes a terrible error in judgment, decides to allow herself to be seduced, physically assaulted, molested, and the punishment greatly outweighs the crime, typically, because she's then manipulated into becoming a murderer and has to deal with psychological damage and pain far beyond what she deserved for her crime. So often that's true that And maybe I need to reconsider my position on throwing the election to Obama. Maybe I'm giving America more punishment than they deserve. But that's the way things work in a fallen world, ladies and gentlemen. That's one of the other many reasons I think that God has so much mercy on us. Is because he understands that the punishment doesn't always fit the crime. He understands that the punishment is quite often monstrously out of proportion with the crime. And he knows that we're broken and we're not able to see that, and therefore he has mercy on us, so much that he was willing to send his only son to come here and live and die and be raised from the dead and live again for us. All right. Go back to the New York City schools. All right. So they're going to give girls emergency contraception, they call it. It's abortifacient pills to kill unborn children. The program is called CATCH, C-A-T-C-H, pretty catchy. Stands for Connecting Adolescents to Comprehensive Health. CATCH. Well, the bureaucrat who came up with that probably got a gold star. Connecting adolescents to comprehensive health. It's part of a citywide attack against the epidemic of teen pregnancy. This is the first time, according to the Post, that New York City schools have dispensed hormonal birth control and Plan B, although they've been giving out rubbers from time immemorial, at least all the way back to when I was in grade school. New York City schools have been handing out the condoms left and right. But this is the first time that they've dispensed hormonal birth control and Plan B. Well, I mean, as far as you know. Wink, wink. Yeah. It might be a nationwide first as well. The National Association of School Nurses could cite no other school district supplying Plan B, well, at least not officially. You know, typically the teachers, they supply it directly to the girls that they seduce and molest. That's been the tradition in New York City schools and other schools around. This is the first documented official disbursement of hormonal contraception. New York City has expanded CATCH to 14 schools with more than 22,000 students over the past years. Over this past year, officials did have to drop one. They had to stop the CATCH program at the Seward Park campus in Lower Manhattan because the program was overwhelming the school medical office. They had so many kids pouring through the door for contraceptives that they couldn't take care of headaches and runny noses anymore. They had to drop the program. But the real problem, ladies and gentlemen, is jobs. And who is going to do best by your pocketbook? That's the real issue. All right, let's go outside of the United States, outside of America. Because there's big things happening out there. From Newsmax. Tensions are rapidly escalating between China and Japan over the control of the Senkaku Islands, where fishing rights and the possibility of massive oil and natural gas reserves has allegedly led to an increase in tensions. The United States so far officially is remaining neutral. Someone needs to call Barry and say there's no such thing as neutral, Barry. Because when you declare yourself neutral in an argument between your ally and your greatest debt holder, you have effectively thrown your Japanese ally under the bus. And let me tell you what I think is going on with China, ladies and gentlemen. I think that the fiction of China's economic miracle is on the verge of collapse. And the Chinese communists, by the way, red Chinese communist murderous government, is going to have to rapidly find a way to channel the anger of the average Chinese citizen when that whole calliope comes crashing down. And they may just start a war to do that. It's happened in the past. Let's go to Israel. Three gunmen infiltrated Israeli territory from central Sinai last week. Two were killed by the Israeli army. The third detonated his explosive vest, killing himself. An Israeli soldier was killed. This was at least the fourth cross-border attack into Israel in just the past year. The Arab Spring is, well, it's producing, it's flowering, so to speak, out the muzzle of a flash suppressor across the Israeli border wearing a suicide vest. Yes, let's get to the Middle East before we run out of time, because there's a number of things I want to point out about what is happening in the Middle East. Let's go to Business Week. The U.S. Embassy in Islamabad. That's in Pakistan. Islam is bad. I mean, it's the name of their capital city. Can't you people figure it out? Islam is bad. Dateline Islamabad, Pakistan. The U.S. Embassy has produced an advertisement from public comments by Barry Ho and Hillary Rodham Clinton disavowing an anti-Islamic film. Uh-huh. Yeah, the State Department has spent about $70,000 to buy commercial time to show the video. Business Week reports that the ad is an attempt to diffuse anti-American sentiment. That's what the ad is. Basically, they're apologizing for a video that no one ever saw and that the United States government and the State Department had nothing to do with. And they've been apologizing for that ever since our ambassador was murdered in Libya. Ladies and gentlemen, we've had a second September 11th. But on a geopolitical scale, it's even more concerning because they have outright murdered an ambassador of the United States on American soil in Libya. And what have we done? We've created an ad apologizing for a video that nobody ever heard of. Oh, well, until Al Jazeera got a hold of it. So the ad is running now, and we can see how well that's working at ameliorating the anti-American sentiment there in the Middle East. So the first ad has Barry and Hill saying how awful this video is, and a second message featuring clips drawn from YouTube features ordinary Americans condemning the film, and it's being shown in countries around the world, and that's not working. The Muslims are still very upset that we've denigrated their holy prophet, the pedophile and murderer, Mohammed. Am I supposed to be scared now that I've publicly called Mohammed a pedophile and a murderer? You know that there have been people calling Mohammed a pedophile and a murderer since I can remember. And all of a sudden, the Arabs, they're all upset about it. You know what's happening, ladies and gentlemen, is that America is weak. We've lost any moral authority. We've thrown our God out. And so believe you me, the Islamists are ready to put your daughter in a burqa and bring their God in. And it's way more than you deserve, America. The punishment of the Islamicization of America is way more than you... Well, maybe it's not, now that I think about it. Now that America has legalized the murder of children and stolen the money of the children that we allowed to live, we've stolen all their money. We've butchered a third of their generation. Maybe putting you in a burqa is what you do deserve, America. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm a part of America anymore. I feel like I'm an outlier on the fringe calling in from the outside saying, what the hell is wrong with you people? What are you thinking about? Have you lost your minds? That's what I feel like. So as you can see, I'm bitter. I'm jaded. I'm upset. And I desperately want to preserve my family and my church. That's what I want to preserve. As for America, I'm not sure that there's anything there anymore, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if there's anything worth saving anymore. I don't know if there's anything worth restoring anymore. A friend of mine said, Doug, God is not going to save America. You need to be a good father. And I think that's timely advice. Meanwhile, on the geopolitical stage from the war file, Egypt's new Islamic president, Mohamed Morsi, said that the United States needs to fundamentally change its approach to the Arab world, showing greater respects for Muslim values and helping to build a Palestinian state if it hopes to overcome decades of pent-up anger. So the Muslims are now saying, America, your ideas about free speech, they're going to have to be modified, or we're going to keep murdering and burning and blowing things up. And the attitude of the current administration seems to be to say, okay, we're sorry for the whole freedom of speech thing. You know, it's kind of a dated concept, we understand, and Allahu Akbar and all that. Can I get a rug and a skull cap, and can't we all just get along? Okay, no more from Morsi. A little bit of advice I want to give from this story as we're closing things out here. I've got a story from Bloomberg that I think should be instructive to anyone who is wondering how to deal with the Islamists and the, what do they call their preachers over there? The Mahdi's? No, the Mahdi's the Antichrist, right? What do they call a Muslim a priest or whatever? An imam. So for anyone who's concerned or wondering how it is we should deal with Islamists and imams, take note of this story from Iran. Since 1979, this is from Bloomberg, by the way. Since 1979, the revolution that brought Shiite Muslim religious leaders to power, women in Iran have been required to cover their hair and body curves in public with headscarves and loose-fitting clothing. Now, we're all familiar with that, right? How the Muslims treat their women. They wrap them up in burlap sacks and cover up their face. Well, this has been going on in Iran since 1979. Well, one imam, Hojalat Islam Ali Baheshi Shashti, I think is his name. I have a hard time. Hojatullah Islam Ali Baheshti. He's a fine, upstanding Muslim imam. He said he encountered a woman in the street while on his way to the mosque in the town of Shahmarizad, and he asked her to cover herself up, to which she replied, "You cover your eyes." Now, the cleric, they call him a cleric, Bloomberg says the cleric repeated his warning to the woman. Well, the woman responded by beating the cleric about the head and shoulders, and he ended up in the hospital for 3 days. That's right. He says he was beaten by the woman for warning her that she was badly covered. He is now recovering in hospital, as they say in Europe. He says it was the worst day of his life. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is how you deal with a cleric or an imam or as an Islamist. You don't tell him you're sorry and I'm going to restrict my speech and I'm going to wrap my wife in a burlap sack. You beat the crap out of him. That's what you do. And that's what we need to be doing. And speaking of that, let's go to Sudan. Final story here, ladies and gentlemen. Friday, September 14th, around 5,000 people protested in Sudan. They stormed the German embassy before breaking into the U.S. mission and attempting to start fires and tear down our flag. Well, a U.S. official told Reuters that day that Washington would send Marines to Sudan to improve the security at the embassy. Well, the next day, on Saturday, September 15th, the president of Sudan, Omar Hassan al-Bashir, rejected a U.S. request to send a platoon of Marines to bolster security at the U.S. embassy. Now imagine for a moment that I, Doug McBurney, am the president of the United States. I get a call from the State Department. Hillary Clinton says, "Hey, Doug, Omar Hassan al-Bashir, he's the president there in Sudan. He says he's not going to let our Marines in." Okay. All righty, Hill. Thank you. I hang up the phone. About a half hour later, I dial up Omar Hassan al-Bashir on the phone. I say, "Hey, Omar. Hey, how's it going, man? Yeah, I'm really disappointed that you say you're not going to let our Marines in. Can you do me a favor? Go into your bathroom and stand and look in the mirror. Do you see those boots that are visible through your bathroom window? Yeah, those are the U.S. Marines. Yeah, and so while I appreciate your position, please understand my position, Mr. Hassan al-Bashir. Do you see that flash suppressor coming through your bathroom window? Yeah. Do you think it'd be okay if I send those Marines over to the embassy? Okay, great. I really appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah, love to the wife and kids, too. Okay, bye-bye." All right, so that's how we would handle this, ladies and gentlemen, if America had any moral fiber remaining in it. But we don't, and Barry Ho doesn't, and Hillary Clinton doesn't. And I'm here to warn you Republicans that Mitt Romney is no better. Don't do it for the money. And don't do it because you think he's going to stand up. You think that one pagan is going to stand up better against the other pagans that threaten to destroy everything about Western civilization? You're deceived and you're fools. And I'm an outlier. I'm a voice crying in the wilderness. And I'm good with that. So if you can stand it, join us again next week. If not, go ahead. Go vote for Romney. There's nothing to see here, ladies and gentlemen. But I will be back, should the Lord tarry. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Bob Enyart Live, and all my friends over there, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back next week, and until then, May the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.